Representative Fluke, and I believe he's going to be joined by Representative Kander.
Thank you, Chairman. I'm Tim Fluke from the 34th District, and I'm here with Representative Kander from the 44th District, the fighting 44th, I'm told. Thank you for hearing our bill today. Representative Kander and I met over the summer break and discussed some concepts on improving ethics for the state of Missouri, and our discussion began with this central point, which is that there is no political party in this state or in this country, for that matter, that's without sinners in the family. There is simply no one that can claim to be holier than thou. And the fact of the matter is that when there is violations of law or when there's people taking advantage of loopholes in the law, it happens wherever there are human beings who exist in a situation where they can achieve for themselves or perhaps something else, there's something to be gained, that they will yield to those temptations and exploit loopholes and do things that a lot of us don't like. And I think that Representative Kander and I agreed on one central point is that in my time here and his time here as well, that we know in our day-to-day dealings that most of the people we deal with in this building are good, honest people on a day-to-day basis. And given the right information and the right opportunity to vote, they're going to vote their conscience and try to do the right thing. And that while at the same time we know that, we also know that there's incidences where doubt is thrown on the integrity of the people who serve down here by the conduct of a group of people or a few individuals. We've seen it happen in both sides of the state. We've seen it happen on the top and the bottom of the state. We've seen both parties involved in terms of having individuals within their parties get caught doing things absolutely illegal or things that just didn't seem right. If they weren't illegal, they certainly didn't pass the smell test. So Representative Kander and I embarked on an effort to truly try to sit down, focus on areas of agreement, and have a bill that we can honestly say is not being proposed for campaign purposes. It's not being proposed in order to one-up the other side. It's not being presented or advertised as a way to accomplish some political agenda for a political organization. It's none of that. It is a true-to-life effort to focus on what we can agree on are things that we need to improve our laws to stop, close loopholes, and ensure that those instances that come up that challenge the integrity of this body are instances that we keep few and far between. And in that respect, we started with several different areas. And I'm going to talk about a few here, and then I'm going to yield the microphone to Representative Kander so he can talk about some of the other points that he's going to cover. And if it's okay with the chairman, we would then yield both of us simultaneously for questions, if that's okay. First and foremost, and I'll begin with one that was just mentioned earlier, since it's always a hot topic, and now that the Supreme Court's ruled, it's brought even more to the forefront with regard to campaign contribution limits. We don't address limitations in this bill. If you ask Representative Kander or you ask me, you'll get two different opinions on campaign finance limits. He'll testify for himself in a moment, but I will tell you, I don't believe in the limitations. I will tell you, I believe that you should be able to donate exactly what you want to donate, and the public should know about it, and we shouldn't be hiding it. So in that respect, in our bill, we want to focus on what really matters, at least from my perspective, and I think we share the opinion, which is we want to make sure the public knows who's being supported by what organization and how much they're investing. We want to make sure it's clear that if somebody is going to spend a large amount of money on you, that the public deserves to know that, and you should be held up and accountable for it. And if the public wants you in, they'll vote you in. If they want you out, they will vote you out. And in that respect, the committee-to-committee transfer provisions in this bill, there's been some other bills suggesting it, are designed to get after that. The failing of the 1994 law from the day it was imposed was that all these committee transfers could still go on. That's why donations continued to expand geometrically over the years, millions and millions of dollars in fundraising. So,
okay, why don't we go through There's a lot of discussion we can have on why something didn't work or why something did work. Let's go through what the bill actually has, and then we'll let people ask questions.
Okay, very good. So the committee-to-committee transfer piece is key to that, to resolving the issue of laundering donations through multiple committees. And another piece of that is there is a provision in here that prohibits a person from serving as a treasurer on more than one committee. Those two parts of this bill are the fulcrum to getting at movement on reducing the laundering of contributions and limiting the ability of any individual group or any individual candidate hiding who's really involved in advocating for them or supporting them in their campaigns. We make the transfer of funds with the intent to conceal the source of those funds a crime. We make that a felony. We also go in and we clarify existing law to make sure that we sew up any potential loopholes with regard to quid pro quo efforts on securing on purchasing an act or omission on the part of a legislator. We also go in and deal with another issue, and this is going at, again, I want to point out, we focused on things that no one can claim they have the moral higher ground on this bill. We focused on the existence of what would be considered a de facto lobbyist, somebody who has been paid by an advocacy group to step into this building or to meet with legislators and try to influence how legislation is being drafted or developed or voted upon. If you are working on legislation, directly or indirectly, you are lobbying, and we need to have a provision to recognize that. Now, that'll have some issues that need to be resolved to make sure we don't harm the ordinary person from coming in down and talking to their legislator. But that's an important piece that we need to make sure we include in any ethics reform. With regard to the way our committee-to-committee transfers would work, we also would we're seeking to establish that if you a candidate can still donate to another candidate, everybody gets to know about it, it's fully disclosed. If a continuing committee wants to make a donation, they can either make it to a candidate or they can make it to the state party committee or the House or Senate campaign committees for the respective parties. But aside from that, there is no other ability to transfer from committee to committee. And we think that, like I said earlier, we think that's pretty important. Now I'm going to turn this over to Representative Cantor, and he's going to speak about the rest of the bill.
Any rest of the bill left as I was looking down through there, but Representative Kander, go right ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If you'd allow me a brief premise before I get into it, I just want to discuss the talk that I've heard a lot, both in the media and in this committee, about the perception. And clearly it is the perception that has brought us here, but I would say that what we have here is an opportunity to do something very significant. And I say that because it concerns me that we might become so obsessed with the perception that we become obsessed with the idea of addressing the perception and the perception alone. We have an opportunity here to fix a problem. There is a problem. And, Mr. Chairman, I read, you know, your interview, for instance, in the Neosho paper. You talked about this is a real opportunity that comes around once in a career. And I'm jealous of the members of this committee. You have an incredible opportunity. So I would urge you, don't just look at the perception, look at the problem. And let me get directly to that. We've been very careful not to discuss specific instances one way or another, and we've done that for a reason, because we want this to be bipartisan, and we believe it is. I'm going to discuss one, because it goes right to the heart of what this bill is about, and because, frankly, it comes from my party, and I think it's appropriate. There's been a lot of talk about Senator Smith and Representative Brown. What I want everyone on this committee to understand is that if Representative Brown and Senator Smith, former in both cases, If every single thing that they did, had they done it in state politics instead of in federal politics, it would have been entirely legal. Think about that for a moment. That is the crux of why we're here. That is a loophole you can drive a truck through, and that's what brings us here. Let me get into how we fix that. The money laundering provision, I want to speak briefly about that in this sense. It is about both the court of law and the court of public opinion. Representative Fluke talked about the ways in which we make it against the law to launder money and then the ways in which we make sure that that can be investigated and prosecuted. But there will be instances where it will be too difficult to build a case and prosecute it. Of course there'll be those instances. And that's why we make sure that if you are going to move this sort of money through your campaign committee, then you must deal with the court of public opinion. We make sure that that's the only way that you can launder money, and that if you do it in a way that can be proved that you were in fact laundering money, you'll be guilty of a felony. If, you know, Representative Fluke touched on the idea of limits and that he's involved with this because he believes that limits don't make sense, and I'm involved with this because I just think that transparency is a wonderful thing. But I would also say to the members of this committee who do believe in campaign limits, if you want those campaign limits to be meaningful and effective, as I do, and as the governor has said in his letter to the General Assembly, when we get those limits, we're going to need these provisions too. So this is significant, and this is a big piece of that. Also, we put in here an obstruction of justice felony, which goes back to just what I was talking about what the former members of this body were convicted of. Right now, we've created an incentive in state law to lie to investigators. Because even if we have just the tightest laws that we can possibly have, when you are approached by an investigator, you have an incentive to lie and end the investigation, because we have not said that's against the law. It should be a felony, just as it is at the federal level. Because if you obstruct an ethics investigation, then it means that it's nearly impossible to convict you of the underlying crime. And the best way to deter people from doing that is to follow federal law and create an obstruction of justice provision. Finally, what I would say is just that this really is the issue. This is the foundation. It's where it starts. The idea of building the transparency and then actually creating criminal provisions for when people try to go around it. Representative Fluke and myself recognize that this will not be the end-all be-all. We recognize that it's not mutually exclusive to other bills. There are great ideas out there that will come before this committee as well. But we also recognize that in 10 years, somebody, probably multiple people, will find a way around this law. And I hope that, you know, thanks to term limits, we'll be gone. But I hope that two more legislators from each side of the aisle step forward and say, we're going to fix the loopholes in Fluke candor. Because that's how this works. That's how corruption works. And I hope that that'll happen. And finally, I know that this is looked at as an issue. To me, this is the issue for one reason. This affects how everything else is done in this body. If we can ensure that we're doing this in an honest way, we can make sure that every other policy is drafted in a way that is honest to the people and that is honest to our conscience. With that, I thank you for the opportunity to speak here today, and I look forward to your questions.
Thank you, Representative and Representative. Any questions for either one? Why did I not know? Representative Witte, proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Gentlemen, can I can't help but look at the details in this, okay? And I appreciate you guys looking at the big picture, but I've got a few questions about some of the details, if you don't mind. And right on page one, do you have the same version of the bill that I've got?
Yes.
On page one, lines 5 and 6, use the word specific state legislation, specific local legislation. Why are you limiting it to specific?
Well, frankly, it has to do with if you're gonna draft a criminal statute, you're gonna have to be specific to be able to prove up what the crime is. I don't want to, you know, and I think we'll speak for Representative Candor on this. If you make it general, if you leave it too general, then you have a question of vagueness and what in fact are you criminalizing. So by making it clear a specific statute section or specific piece of legislation or regulation, then you zero in it and you can have an element for the crime that is understandable to the party who's being told not to do it.
Okay. Let's go over to page 10. And I know this is not anything that you're changing, but I've got a question about lines 108 through 112. It's talking about income. I won't take the committee's time. Sometime I'd like to talk to you about that. I don't understand why some of those limitations are in there about the provided that income should not be considered and all that.
I don't know either, actually. I have to go back and look at the history of that old section of the statute.
Okay. And then more questions back on page 26. So you got a provision there about the first violation of committee-to-committee transfer. So who are you trying to say will be guilty of the crime? I mean, is it the who would be guilty of?
I think in this section it's going to be up to the Ethics Commission as to who they want to cite, but I think the obvious here is going to be the treasurer. I mean, the person who is legally responsible for making that transfer. But of course, I think we leave it purposefully open to the idea that if someone else is specifically involved in that, I mean, if someone comes along and says, "Hey, look, you need to make this transfer," someone facilitates it, someone demands it. Well, clearly, I think that they should be part of that investigation.
Okay, and then again about the first violation, it says the ethics committee. Now, is that a typo? Is that supposed to be Ethics Commission?
Yes.
Shall notify such person that the transfer to the committee is prohibited within 5 days of determining that it's prohibited, and that such person shall notify the committee to which the funds were transferred that the funds must be returned within 10 days of such notification. Okay. My question is, will happen if the funds are not returned?
I think, if you go into the rest of the statute, that's why we put in several steps. And that's also why this is – I appreciate your attention to this, but as far as the penalty provision for the transfer, I would argue that this is not the most important section, that this is to some extent married to the section of the bill that says that if you make a transfer for the purposes of obscuring funds, that is a felony. So this is where we were trying to create sort of an administrative or regulatory process for the commission to address this, because let's be honest, I mean, there are going to be cases where it wasn't done for that intent and it's possible someone didn't know the law. We wanted to create a process by which those individuals could be informed and remedy the situation. If you have suggestions as to penalties that should be in here, Representative, I think we're certainly interested in listening to those.
Okay, so let's go on to that part. And just so you all know, that this last section I'll be questioning. The prohibition, it's subsection 2 on the same page, lines 146 through 148. The prohibition in this subsection shall not apply to any transfer of funds from a committee to a candidate committee unless the funds were transferred to the candidate committee with the intent to conceal the identity of the actual source of the funds. So if somebody has a continuing committee of some sort, and they make a contribution to a candidate's committee, and they can say the source of these funds is from ABC Corporation or XYZ Labor Union, then they have not hidden the identity of the actual source of the funds. They've disclosed the actual source of the funds.
Let me address.
So is that
necessary to go that
legal?
I don't even think it's necessary to go that far. What we've set up here is we recognize that under the First Amendment, both when it comes to speech and assembly, we can't get rid of every continuing committee. We can't get rid of them. I mean, and so as a result, what we want to do is we want to set up, and I'm going to address it specifically in a second, but let me address the overall first. We want to create a system whereby we deter the act of washing money back and forth. So my concern, therefore, is not about, say, an individual making a contribution to a political action committee, then which makes a contribution to a candidate. That is not my concern. My concern is when that individual makes a contribution to that political action committee and everyone involved or just one person involved has the intent of doing that in order to get it to a candidate and conceal their involvement in the contribution. Now, I think we both grant that is a high bar to prove, but it's proved in federal court. It's done both in political corruption cases and in every other kind of law that involves money laundering. Go ahead.
And to give you a good example, let's say I don't want to be known as receiving donations from trial attorneys. So I go to Representative Kander and say – or I go to somebody that's with the Trial Attorney Association and I say, can you donate X dollars to Jason Kander. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. I can't take this in my committee. I don't want anybody to know I got funds from him. If you give it to Jason, I can take a donation from Jason. You know, if you do that scenario and he takes the money and gives it to me and it's part of a transaction so that I can get money out of an organization without having to admit that I got money out of the organization, that would be criminalized. Now, it would take somebody getting caught and rolling over on the other to prove up that transaction, but this would make that illegal.
Okay. But my question is more, again, it's just more practical how this is going to work. If, in your example, if Jason sends that check to you and says, I'm disclosing to you that this money came from the Trial Attorneys Association, and you put that in your report, then there's no crime, right? You've disclosed the source of the funds.
I think what we're getting at here is public disclosure. And so I think it's one thing, and frankly, I think that would be evidence for the felony. If a contribution is made to a political action committee and the political action committee then makes a contribution directly to a candidate committee and says to the candidate, look, this is coming from, you know, Mr. X, but Mr. X didn't want everybody to know he's donating to you, or in the contrary, you don't want Mr. X's money on your report. If that's the case, or if it's just, hey, this is coming from this guy, but he doesn't know anything about it, well, that's different, I suppose. But if that's even without saying that, it would be within the law. It becomes a problem within this statute. It becomes a problem within the law we're trying to create. It becomes against the law when you say, this is coming from this person, but they didn't want to be on your report, or this is coming from this person through me for a reason. That is exactly the kind of evidence that we would hope investigators would be able to unearth and use in a prosecution for money laundering.
I think you missed a part of my presumption. I said, and then Representative Fluke would indicate on his report the source of the funds, that it came from you or from them through you, as long as he indicated.
Well, then I suppose he would maybe, in that case, potentially
he would be disclosing
prosecution, but I don't think the other people involved would. I mean,
he would be disclosing the source of the
funds. Let me put it this way, Representative. If that's the discussion that we're going to have on this, then I'm excited, because what that means to me is this is something that I feel passes the muster of this committee. It seems to pass the muster of the majority leader who endorsed it in front of this committee, the speaker, and I'm excited because I think those are great questions. I think we're getting down to the nitty-gritty of how to apply this, and that's exactly where we need to be, because this needs to be law, and we just need to make sure we apply it correctly.
Okay.
So I appreciate your question.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Further questions? Representative Curls, you still have a question after all the time?
Maybe mine will be a little quicker. To inquire, please. Thank you. On page 18, and I know there has been some discussion regarding treasurers not serving on more than one committee, of course, even before today. But I have wondered how that might impact maybe smaller municipalities or smaller rural areas, where, of course, there may not be as many folks that would be either eligible or willing to serve as treasurers of some of these committees.
There's always somebody willing to serve if you're willing to go out and ask people if they're interested. Eventually, you'll find somebody to serve as a treasurer. I'll go back to my earlier statement. The fulcrum is two parts on getting at laundering money. If you have one person serving as a treasurer of multiple committees, they can move that money around all over the place, and there is no opportunity for there to be another party involved. There's no other opportunity for another party involved. There's no other witness. So many cases that get prosecuted are because in order to accomplish the criminal act, it takes two or more people. And the prosecutor will find a legitimate reason to prosecute one person and through that prosecution find out about what else was going on with other people. And that's what we want to make sure and recognize, that if you allow one treasurer to run multiple continuing committees – you can run into some serious problems, and if you really want to get at money laundering, and when I say money laundering, I mean hiding where money's coming from, where it's going to. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, the public should be able to know that, or within two clicks of a button on the internet, should be able to put two and two together, figure out where the money came from. So, if someone can show me how you can accomplish that goal and still let somebody be the treasurer on multiple continuing committees, and only inside their mind do they know what's really going on.
Now you're saying continuing, this refers to all committees.
All committees. I'm sorry. Yeah, all committees. I think it limits the opportunity to set up deals, if you will.
I also want to address this provision real quick, because let's talk about what it is we're talking about. We use the term committee. We use the term treasurer. We know what that means. When the public thinks of that, I assure you, they think of people sitting around a table, right? They think of a committee. They think of a treasurer as being an officer of that committee. I think it says a lot about our system in this state that all of us know that it's probably more often the case that a treasurer is one person and a checkbook and probably one piece of paper they filed with the Ethics Commission. Now we don't undertake to change that system, but what we do recognize is that the easiest way to launder money from one political action committee to another is just to sit at your desk in your house where you have multiple political action committees registered, get out five checkbooks, and write five checks. And I'm not pointing anywhere in particular, but good Lord, I'm sure that's happening. I'm sure it's happened in the past. Mm-hmm. And so we have to get at that. That is what this part is about, and we have to recognize that when that happens, we're not talking about a treasurer. We're talking about a bagman. We want to end that practice. And I'm not saying that's the case in every situation. There are so many situations where people are multiple treasurers, and they do it in earnest. Mm-hmm. What we're saying is we haven't figured out a way to paint that line and find such a thin brush that we can account for them. And if someone has a way to account for those individuals, we are all ears. But what we recognize is that a treasurer is just supposed to be one of the officers. Yes, it's the statutory officer, but one of the officers of this committee. And so if people want to have multiple committees they're involved with, they don't always have to be the treasurer. They don't always have to be the signatory on that check.
Right. And as I said, it was a question I had, and the question certainly, maybe another option would be, and I don't know whether it's a problem. Certainly I'm from an urban area where we don't typically have that problem. But I certainly began then to wonder whether maybe we should prohibit, if in fact folks see that there's some problem with treasurer serving on more than one committee, I mean, maybe they just should not transfer money between the committees for which they serve as treasurer. You know, I don't know. But certainly, thank you for the inquiry.
Representative Morse.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, to inquire.
Proceed.
On page 16, section 6, referring the obstruction of an ethics investigation. My question is where you say to either or both the Attorney General or the county prosecutor of the county where the violations are alleged to have occurred for prosecution in any appropriate circuit court of the state. Give me your rationale for either or both the Attorney General or county prosecutor.
Well, that is, I inquired with legislative research about that when we went through this, and they basically, what I was told is that's sort of standard language for anything that's going to be, you know, a newly created criminal statute, that it's going to be referred sort of to either one. And I guess if I were to make an educated guess, it's that in this case, I think it's especially necessary because we're talking about politics here, right? We're talking about politicians, and we're talking about crimes committed by them or allegations against them. There are going to be times where what we want to avoid are witch hunts. We don't want political agendas happening in ethics reform. That's not what we're interested in, and we've taken great steps to avoid it in this bill. But we also want to make sure that if there is political pressure at the local level not to prosecute someone, that can also be taken to the state level. I'd give you a quick example at the federal level. Several years back, I clerked at the U.S. Attorney's Office in Kansas City, and there was a judge whose name I can't remember in Northwest Missouri, a state judge who had folks from the prison coming out and it was a long corruption charge. We're not going to get into the details. But the local prosecutor, given politics in the area, wouldn't prosecute. And as a result, the federal government came in and the federal government prosecuted. It's sort of a similar thing that we're trying to create here. There are going to be times where there's a lot of pressure not to prosecute in an area. We want to make sure that there's a second individual to step in and make that decision.
And if there is pressure to prosecute,
then you have the same remedy here.
But who determines?
Well, I mean,
this
it's
is
like
my question as to where it goes.
You know, it's like any other crime. I mean, the prosecutor determines it, but ultimately it's got to go before a jury. And like I said, we've taken great steps by making it a very hard case to prove, just as hard as it is at the federal level, if not more. If you look at the language of these statutes, we've created a very high bar. When you look at this, it's like any other criminal provision. I mean, you can't, at the end of the day, say that a prosecutor doesn't have the right to prosecute something that's a crime on the books.